as you know, when you celebrate those kiddos and you celebrate their small achievements over days turn into large achievements by the end of the month. So when the kids know that we're celebrating them and monitoring what they're doing, and the staff know the same thing, we start to see more of that closing of the achievement gap.
Welcome everyone to the Change Starts Here podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Odom. And this week I am coming, I'm coming from my home in, my parents' house in Tallahassee, Florida. I am on spring break with my kids, and there's just this woman that you're going to meet here in a second, Laura Mendocino, that we have on today, who is a remarkable leader. And we really, given our four disciplines of execution focus this semester, we wanted to make sure we could get her in this month. And so we prioritized getting her in ASAP. I recently visited her school in Pinecrest Elementary School in Collier County, Florida. And it was just a remarkable experience. It was a remarkable experience in the sense that students feel seen, heard, loved. They believe that they are the leaders of the school. And you just get to see the results that that school gets. It's a uniquely diverse school, given that Collier County, if you know Collier County, think of it as Naples. It's in Immokalee, which is still a part of Collier County. And there's a lot of migrant workers, high free reduced lunch population, a lot of English language learners there. And so there's a lot of kids that show her and her staff will get that aren't able to even speak English, let alone learn at that time. And just seeing how confident and amazing those kids are, seeing the teachers that just believe in the power of their kids and believe in the potential of their kids is awesome. And the thing I love most about Laura is when you talk to her off air, even on air, as you'll see in this conversation, she just believes in everyone around her. She empowers everyone around her. It's never about her. And so that's the exciting part to talk to her. So today, if you are implementing four disciplines of execution in your schools or your school system, this is a phenomenal conversation to listen to. If you don't know what the heck I'm talking about, this is a great conversation to listen to. And if you're intrigued by about the potential of implementing four disciplines of execution, this is a great conversation to listen to. Laura is, like I said, incredibly humble, but she answers these questions in a very direct, concise way that will help you. And so I would just say, get your notebooks out, however you take notes. I take on my Apple Notes, but be ready to take notes on this one because it's super helpful and super informative. Laura Mendocino is someone who has led two schools from good to great in Collier County. She's about to be, I don't know of her direct title, but elementary schools director, assistant soup, something along those lines in Collier County, and will be impacting the lives of so many more kids. And she's just someone that I think you're going to want to get to know and learn from in many different ways. So it was a blessing to have her. I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did. As always, if you're a subscriber, thank you so much for subscribing. If you haven't subscribed, please subscribe. But most importantly, as you listen to this, if there's any educator in your life that needs to hear what Laura is talking about today, please share this with them. Again, thank you for joining us and enjoy this interview. I'm coming off sky high, super excited after this conversation. So I hope you enjoy it. All right, Laura, thank you so much for making time to meet with me. I am on my kids' spring break right now, which anybody who's watching sees I'm in a hat and a hoodie. That's not the typical get up here. I apologize because you look very nice and well prepared for this. But thank you for joining us right after your spring break.
Absolutely. I'm honored to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I am pumped. You're famous in my world and our world of Franklin Covey education. So with that, there's no pressure. But I am curious. This question that I used to love to ask every podcast as we got started, which is, who are you and what do you love about what you do?
That could be a really loaded question. So I am first and foremost, I'm a mom and a wife and a daughter. I believe in family first, then faith, and then our profession. I'm a very proud mother of four amazing kids. I live in Florida, and I'm the proud principal of Pinecrest Elementary School, which is in Immokalee. We are a small town out here, lots of farming that happens here, and our students come from very diverse backgrounds. But this place out here has absolutely been my home for the past 12 years. I've been at Pinecrest for four as their principal.
Yeah, so for people who aren't familiar with Immokalee, can you give a little bit of the demographics? Because what's interesting is you're in Collier County, So folks that aren't from that area think, oh, it's Naples. That's awesome. That's great. I mean, it's beautiful. And I love coming to your school and your kids are amazing. But I'm curious, how would you describe just that portion of Collier County?
Sure. So, and Collier County is huge. You know, you're right. When people hear Collier County, they think of Naples and the beaches, and that's absolutely part of our county. But we are the size of Delaware, so a very large school district. And we are in the northeast corner of Collier County. Like I said, Immokalee, Florida. Our demographics are very diverse. The mass majority of our students are English language learners. At my school in particular, about 50% of my students are migrant, and we have the highest demographics of English language learners in the county for all of our elementary schools. We have over 300 of our 600 students are ELL students and receiving ELL services. This year has been a challenge for not only our school, but I know many counties receiving a lot of students in who have never been to school. English is going to be, you know, something that they're learning along with learning our state standards. So we welcome all of our students with open arms. Our parents are typically farm workers or they work in the packing houses. They trust the school system. You know, they love coming here. They love coming to our events. They are excited to send their kids to us, very trusting in us. And we really hold that to high regards.
That's interesting. I mean, I we could geek out. I know that we've got a tight timeline today, but I would love to geek out on just the unique challenges that presents to your staff, right? Because moving kids from A to B and improving their academic outcomes is always difficult no matter where they are, but there's just some unique challenges. But also I think there's some unique blessings that you have. As you know, the last 2 months here, I guess this whole semester, we've been focusing on the four disciplines of execution. And it's something that I know that you're very well equipped to talk on. So tell me a little bit about how you guys have used the four disciplines of execution to help get the results and increase performance for your kiddos.
Sure. So, you know, we started in our journey with the four disciplines of execution, really with talking about where is our ladder at? Our ladder has to be on the right wall. And if we all choose different walls to put our ladder on, we're going to be making very slow progress that's not as impactful as what we would want to see for our kids. It also means we might not be speaking the same language. So using the 4DX model, we've been able to create very impactful WIGs across our campus within our area of deficit, which is reading. And everyone is speaking the same language. So we're taking the imperatives that we have to do from the district and the state level, and we're making sure that we're being very strategic and aligning those imperatives with our 4DX model as well. So it doesn't feel like one more thing. We want it to be very meaningful and impactful for the teachers because we know that when they're buying into it and when they're using it authentically within the classroom and working with individual students or groups of students or their class or their team, we're going to see that impact from them.
It seems so natural to you. I mean, before I got a chance to know you, like I said, you were famous in my world as someone who just gets the head and the heart of this work. And what I mean by that is you understand the soft skills and the love and the empowerment of the kids and the teachers, but you also get the really hard skills, which is like, let's get results and let's move the needle. And that can be intimidating sometimes to teachers. So I'm curious, as you transition from school to school using this, what are the keys to getting teachers on board to implement this process early on so it doesn't feel what you described as one more thing?
Sure. So I think you have to start with the why. You know, what's our purpose? Why do we need to focus on this? Why is this a tool that we feel we're going to benefit from not only professionally, but through our students' learning? So beginning with the why and hearing the teacher's voice come through that and being able to make the connections then. Also being able to very freely talk about the challenges. As educators in a very diverse community, what challenges are we facing? And then how does that connect with where we want to go? And how can 4DX really support where we want to go to overcome those challenges to really meet our why academically and as professionals? I think a lot of it is our staff first understanding and understanding that connection to how it can support. And it's a lot of conversations and it's a lot of listening at first as well. So it takes time. We've used that crock pot method before. We're not going to just jump right in a burning oven. We're going to sit there. We're going to kind of let it resonate. We're going to understand how it impacts us. And we start at personal levels too. That's what we've done at both of the schools that I've been at. We've started with the personal level with our staff because they could then see the impacts as well. So I think beginning with the why, connecting it to our challenges that we absolutely have and that we cannot deny that we have, and then seeing how can this then move us forward as a staff, and we are a team, and if we're all doing the same thing and having that same voice and having that same focus, really then celebrating each of the steps when we see each of those achievements being met too.
Yeah, one of the things, so I love, you know, we talk about often at Franklin Covey, it's a crock pot, not a microwave, right? Which is very true. How do you get lasting change is you have to go slow to go fast. However, serving the population you're blessed to serve, there's a sense of urgency that you have to have of, I need my students to really grasp the concepts that we're teaching here. And some of them need to catch up, right? I mean, I taught in 100% free reduced lunch schools my whole career. That you have to balance going slow to go fast, but we feel like we have to go fast. How do one, you do that? And then two, how do you help navigate that in your leadership where you know you've got to go fast, but you know you can't go too fast?
So a lot of that is about data analysis, and it's about the individual child. It's also about the classroom that they're in. The way that we formulate our classrooms here in Collier County is we do reduce the range of students, which provides us a very unique opportunity of providing multiple supports to those classrooms with the higher needs students to try to expedite the closing of the achievement gap. I don't think that there's ever an easy answer to how do you go slow to go fast, but also go fast so you're not going slow. But I think it's by individual student, and it's by that classroom, and it's about celebrations. As you know, when you celebrate those kiddos and you celebrate their small achievements over days turn into large achievements by the end of the month. So when the kids know that we're celebrating them and monitoring what they're doing, and the staff know the same thing, we start to see more of that closing of the achievement gap. By mid-year, we've celebrated some of our classrooms with over a 200% increase in their reading levels, which is phenomenal. But it's about just those solid systems. And that is one of the things that I've taken away as an instructional leader, just through the systems that the Covey Foundation does offer. And I think that 4DX has been a huge piece of that in ensuring that we all just have a very specific focus.
Yeah. What are the keys, or what are some good examples for celebrations? Because one of the things that I would say, my wife was pretty phenomenal as a teacher, was figuring out ways to celebrate those little wins along the way. And she taught reading in the Bronx and in the city of St. Louis with me. But I was always the, all right, good job, high five, let's get to the next challenge. And so I went past so many celebratory moments that I wish I could go back to. What are just some little examples that you've seen that really make a difference, from like a sticker chart to, I don't know, a coin or something? I'd love to know, what are some of those things that you've noticed that have done well?
So I think one of the best things that I've seen within my two schools, we've built leaders, right? We built adult members of our staff who want to be a part of things, who want to lead their specific areas. So we have a reading coach, a math coach, a science coach, a media specialist. They have all taken very specific celebration opportunities. So for example, we have our reader leaders of the month. Now that is a month, so that's a long time for kids, right? So that's more of an end in mind of a month piece, but those kiddos get called down, we're taking their pictures, we're putting them on social media. At the end of the quarter, we have dance-offs and popcorn parties and movies and water day, which was super fun. Celebrations can also be very small. So every week we do Wig Wednesday on our morning news, and our students do the Wig Wednesday. We're in the background, you know, watching them lead the way. But that's an opportunity for the class. When the class gets called for their class meeting the Wig or exceeding the Wig, they get to stand up and do their little wiggle dance. And their wiggle dance is very specific to their class. They made it up, and it's a time for them to celebrate weekly. In the classroom, our teachers have tons of different sticker charts, like you mentioned. One of our teachers, which I thought was phenomenal, she walks around with stars that are cut out. And on them, they already say, I like how you. And then as she's teaching her lessons, she's dropping these stars that are very intentional on the kids' desks as they're working towards meeting their goals. So she's thinking about what are the action steps that they need to take? What are those lead measures and how are they using them in their daily learning? And she's just dropping that little star there to celebrate it. And they can put that in their leadership notebook. And at the end of the year, they can lay out all their stars and see the amazing things they've done. And that's a great visual for the kids to see, hey, on this day I did this. And on this day I did this. And now look at my trackers. I've gone from here to here. So lots of little things. And one of the things we talk about with our staff is it doesn't have to cost money. Right? Kids like to eat with a staff member. Kids like to come and eat with me, you know, lunch with a principal. I will absolutely block off time to have lunch with kids. So those are the small things that, you know, we can do on the daily or weekly to make sure that kids know that we're celebrating them. Our math coach does a phenomenal job. He has math belts, kind of like the WWE belts, you know, and he goes around though, and he celebrates classrooms every week with who has exceeded the expectations of their wigs on the Alex platform. And he monitors it daily. The kids, when he sees them in the hall, he is doing those high fives. And oftentimes we don't know what a high five can do for a kid, right? In the morning when I stand out at car line, if I see some of the kids who have been struggling, because I get the daily reports from all the coaches, and I see one, and I saw that they made their wig the week before, I make sure to point that kid out, give them a big hug, tell them how proud I am of them. So it's all the little pieces, I think, that we try to do that connect between the classroom, the school environment, and then to home, because we do a lot of home phone calls as well when the child has met their wig. We want their parents to hear from us in a very positive light.
What does that look like? So that means, you know, treat me as one of your teachers. If I have a roster of kids and I have, let's say, half my kids make it each week or each month, when am I calling? How am I calling? Because I do think that's so critical. And that starts developing that muscle for kids that feel like they're winning, and parents to celebrate them and keep encouraging that flywheel to keep moving.
So it really depends on how the wig is written, right? Some of our classes choose to write a quarterly wig. Some of the classes choose to write a monthly wig. So when students achieve their wig, they get a positive referral. That positive referral is then celebrated on our morning news. We read the child's name out and what they received that referral for. They come down and they sign our wig wall of fame, and they ring our wig bell. And then we post their picture on social media. From that point forward, if it is an English-speaking family, I do the phone call, and I just tell to their parents, say who I am, that I'm proud of their child for, you know, crushing their wildly important goal and what that means, and the fact that a new goal will be coming forward. So we always encourage the parents to discuss with their child what their goal is. If I can't personally make the phone call, either my secretary does that, or one of the front office staff members do that, so that we can make that phone call home in a language that the parents can communicate in. And they have like a little mini script that they use to do that communication. So we stay pretty consistent.
That's great. I mean, it sounds like your teachers are working, you know, their butts off at your school. How do you create a culture of celebration for the adults? And what are some of the key components of having a positive culture for the adults? So while you're working really hard, serving again the population you're blessed to serve, what are you doing to keep that flywheel going at the adult level?
So I think it's important to not just have administration celebrating the staff members, but to really build that culture, right, with amongst themselves. They celebrate each other. So we have a board in our mailroom that is the fill your bucket board, and we're filling each other's buckets. So we're writing positive things. We put it in one bucket, and then those are read aloud to the staff members, and then they're hung for display. And at the end of the year, we encourage our staff members to put those in their professional leadership notebook, so they can look back on how they've impacted positively somebody's life or how they were remembered by someone. For us as administrators, there's very different ways that we celebrate our staff members. When we're in the classroom, taking our sticky notes out and just putting a nice little sticky note on somebody's computer based on either something that they did for a student or with a student that we saw. It may be something academically, but we always try to also find things that they're doing that might not be related to the academics. When they notice that kid who needed the pair of shoes and they took that time out just to say, hey, listen, I want you to go see our counselor for this. it's nice to see that our staff are very aware of what our students' needs are and that they know it's okay to take the time to do that. We also do the fun celebrations for the month, you know. We're doing a potato bar next month. It's always fun to have some spuds and suds, so root beer floats and potato bars for them. Our staff probably think we're a little crazy with some of the things we do. We walk around in our wigs on Wednesday, and we'll go visit classrooms too and just celebrate the whole class, which is, you know, driven by the teacher's instruction for meeting their wigs. So we try to be personal. There are some of our staff members who do not like to be announced out, and we try to learn that because that's important for them. I won't say that we're perfect at it, but we do try. We also try to celebrate our staff by looking at what is their area of greatness, and we offer something called win-win workshops, and that's a time for them to lead. So some people may not see that as a celebration, but that's what we're trying to continue to infuse here, is that it is a celebration. You are such a genius at this aspect. And if we could all learn from that, that's more tools in our pocket. So I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. Don't stress. What's funny for those of you listening or watching, this amazing woman had said I don't really like podcasts. I don't know if it's my thing. And I am enjoying every second of this conversation. And so just keep being you, Laura. That's all I can say.
Thank you. Yes. I like watching podcasts.
Yeah. So anyways, as you've implemented this, I guess, in two schools now, is that correct?
Yes.
What have been the most consistent challenges early in implementation? And what are the challenges that kind of creep up a year or two into the implementation of 4DX?
So I think the challenges are different at each school. The first school was under a different level of state oversight. We were really at a different point of the Leader in Me. My predecessor had brought in the Leader in Me book, and they had started the book study already. So really with them and with 4DX, it wasn't until year two that we really started in with four disciplines of execution. We really started out with the seven habits piece and understanding leadership within ourselves and then leadership externally. With the school that I'm currently at, Pinecrest, they were under a very different level of state oversight, and there was a sense of urgency. We had to turn the school around. And the tool that I knew as an instructional leader was four disciplines of execution. So we did come in pretty quickly with it. I mean, year one, day one, and it was beginning with that why. Why do we need to do this? And why do we need a common language and a common focus? And how can this help us with that compounding effect, right? For both schools, I would say the challenge that I've seen replicate itself is that after we've achieved the success, there's been a little bit of okay, we've got this, right? So it then comes back to our lighthouse team to say, okay, we do have it, but we still have to keep doing these things because these were the pieces that helped us succeed. You know, this very intentional planning that we have done with implementing four disciplines of execution and leadership notebooks with scoreboarding and everything, those are the things that have helped us be successful. So we can't relax backwards. We have to stay on that. So we've had to, at both schools, really look at how can we keep that a common conversation piece and always alive for us in our system. So developing systems that the school needs to keep it alive.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing. You know, I don't care what type of school you're in. I don't care what the makeup of the school is. The day-to-day life of being in a school building, we call it the whirlwind. It's just coming at you all the time. And so it's got to be one of the toughest parts is keeping the focus on what's most important, the four disciplines of execution for you guys in the midst of the whirlwind. What are the keys to that? It sounds like having systems like Wig Wednesdays that are always there no matter what's happening seems to be a pretty pivotal key. Is that correct? And two, what else would you say is key to making that part of your culture?
I think, yes, having systems is key. And then having systems to maintain the systems, right? So we have wig boards across the school, but what is the system to maintain that? Well, our kids are our system, and our student leaders who go and make sure that their classes' wigs are maintained outside on their board and their team wigs are maintained. That's huge because they even help our guest teachers when they're here to ensure that their systems are followed. But we have other student leaders then that continue to monitor that, and they provide feedback. And it's great because these kiddos are providing feedback to our staff. And they say, love how you did this. Great job. 5 weeks, you know, 5 weeks in a row, you guys have been crushing the wig. But they'll also say things like, hey, we noticed it's Wednesday and we don't have our wig updated. How can we help you? So there's a level of accountability that the kids put on adults, which in my mind is great. Listen, my student leaders come to me on Monday morning, and if their data is not hanging up there for them to analyze, they are knocking on my door. Even if I'm in a meeting, they're like, we need our data. So I think a lot of it is accountability, and it's accountability at all levels. It's not an administrative thing. It's not 10% down.
Well, how does it, how long does it take in your eyes, or what are the keys to getting the kids to own it at the level that you want them to own it? Because I think when I was doing school turnaround before I came to Franklin Covey, I had a my paradigm was all adults, all adults, all adults, all adults. It was like, while we were successful, it was a system that was being done to kids versus a system that's empowering kids. And so that's why I'm here at Franklin Covey. That's why I love the impact that we get to see in places like your schools. But how long does that take to get kids to really own it and to almost take more responsibility for themselves than the teachers take for themselves or take for the kids?
I would say that it's probably different at every school, but in, you know, reflecting upon my past two schools that we've been at and we've implemented this, around year three is when I've really seen that shift. I think it takes some time for the adults to learn. Then kind of year two is like, okay, the kids are learning and they're getting on board. And by year three, the adults start to see the opportunities for the students. So they start to get out of the way and they start to allow the students to do some of those things that they used to be doing. So I think year three is when I've seen more of the release to the students. I think it's important as a lighthouse team that we're modeling that before year three, so that the other staff members start to see it and the kids start to talk about it. Because once they start talking about it, you know, you have to get out of the way.
Yeah, absolutely. When you think about just your experience with 4DX, what has been the most rewarding part of the four disciplines, just in your experience as an educator, right? Like what warms your heart or what gets you so excited about the impact that you've seen?
Pride, the increase of pride. Pride in themselves, whether it be a staff member or a student or a family who has that pride for their child. Pride in the school, knowing that this is a very special place to be and that the things that are being offered for children and not because it's what us as adults want. And it's pride within the community. Our community looks at our schools really as beacons. And when we can turn schools around, when we can show leadership in the community, our community becomes, you know, our biggest backer. So I think that sense of pride is huge. You know, with that comes school grades, of course, you know, yes, but they increase and that's what we want. So that gives us that sense of pride. There's also that sense of belonging because of the things that you're proud in and because what you are a part of at the school. So I think the pride piece is the biggest part for me. And I think that's what I've seen change at both schools. Students having the confidence that then drives their competence. Because when they're proud of themselves and their work that they're doing, no matter if it's leadership or academics or within a cultural realm, they show that confidence. And then that also impacts what they're doing in the classrooms academically and taking the risks because those relationships are built.
That's awesome. So as someone's listening to this who doesn't implement the four disciplines of execution in their school, but they've thought about it for a while, they've considered it, what advice would you have to give them as they're considering, should they do this and what should they, what if they decide that they want to do this, what should they be weighing as they come into this process?
So I would say that as educators, we all have goal setting, right? We have school improvement plans, and a lot of educators, principals, building leaders, district leaders will say, yep, we have data binders and we set goals. And I think a lot of people dismiss the power that's behind the four disciplines of execution because they're already doing goal setting. But what I would encourage people to do is to see what's missing in a goal. And this is kind of how I have always explained it to people. The four disciplines of execution, if you look at the visual, it's that triangle, right? And if you're just setting the goal and the other three layers of that triangle, those other two, three, and four disciplines are missing, that goal is gonna fall flat on its face. I have set a weight loss goal for years. And until I really used 4DX to do it, I didn't lose any weight. And I became very frustrated because it was all about the scale. So I would say, take the mindset of, yes, you do goal setting. And that's the first step. That's the first discipline. You're missing three parts of it. And if you can really learn this process and the greatness that there is within it, and if you can become passionate about it, and if you can show other people how it can personally impact them and then professionally impact them, you're going to win your whole staff over. I think that people have to understand the power of the discipline 2, discipline 3, and discipline 4, and where that's different than just goal setting.
Yeah, I was listening to something. I get made fun of by my wife sometimes for looking at TikTok. But what I do appreciate about TikTok is the algorithms. Like, I find stuff on goal setting and faith and other things that I care about a lot, which I really appreciate. And there was someone talking about how people rise to the level of their systems, meaning that everyone has goals. I think you use an example of people running like a 100-meter sprint. They all have the same goal to win, but the people who get to the top have the biggest discipline, have the best systems to get those predictable results. Does that resonate with you when you think about 4DX?
100%, 100%. Those people who are achieving those goals, they have a system to follow. It's not just a goal written on a paper that you're trying to track and you're becoming frustrated with. That, to me, is the biggest difference with 4DX, and the staff and the students can understand it. And the resources that are provided for us too within the classroom, they are so powerful. And if you can create systems that work for your school around them or for your business model around them, you're going to see success.
When you think about, I mean, you're stepping into a role to oversee a number of principals coming up, and whether you had that position or not, like, you've been influencing people, you're probably your entire career, just the way you love and lead and serve people. But as you think about, you know, different schools, this isn't about 4DX, as you think about different results or different principals that you're going to lead, what are the type of paradigms you think your most successful principals need to have when it comes to moving the needle and building a positive culture for their schools for success?
Just knowing where we are at in our county, I think that belief that everyone has greatness and that everyone has a spot for leadership, because when you tap into that, you not only increase your staff morale, you don't not only increase your retention rates, right? You then also are going to start to impact your kiddos with that. So just having the belief that everyone has a very key place here, and that myself as a building leader, it's my job to make sure we're tapping into that right place and that we have systems in place to support them. I think that's where we would go with that.
So we got quick rapid fire questions. My first rapid fire question is, what is a habit or discipline you utilize on a daily or weekly basis that helps you just be the best version of yourself?
Seek first to understand. I definitely think habit five is something, it's something that I'm always challenging myself with as well. There's time frames where we don't have a lot of time, and sometimes I want to just go, and I know that I can't. So it causes me to pause.
That's awesome. All right. What book have you read lately or throughout your career that you want to recommend to anybody out there who's an educational leader, or it's a book that changed your life in some way?
Maybe not so much changed my life, but a lot of affirmation and then next steps for me. It's called Leaders Eat Last. And I really appreciate that book. There's a lot of great connections within the 7 habits in there as well.
That's awesome. I don't know what role music plays in your life, but as I preface this question every time on a podcast, living in St. Louis, Missouri, baseball is a big deal. So my kids are obsessed with different baseball players' walk-up songs. So when you think about a motivational song as you're driving to school or just something to put you in the right frame of mind, what would be your walk-up song right now?
Oh gosh, that's a heavy one, because I'm not really a music person.
Hey, by the way, I asked my boss this when I had her on the podcast, and I knew that music wasn't her thing. And so she's the first and only person to answer sports talk radio in Philadelphia, which is completely appropriate, because it gives you a window, right? She loves it. It helps her set herself. I mean, she works so much. She reads so much. And it was just awesome to see that. It's like, you know, sports talk radio for me. And so it can be that. I'm just curious.
Well, listen, I would say pretty much any of the hits on K-Love, because that's what I have to listen to when I go to work in the morning. That's where I'm at. Get my mind.
Yeah, well, my kids right now, I don't know if it's made K-Love yet, but they would recommend Good Day by Forrest Frank. That is our song. So if you want to Google that when we leave, that's a song that your kids will like. Every day is going to be a good day. Last question, you know, whether it's something you've come across online or, you know, you've got a great leader there in Chuck Franz, who's getting ready to step down. I'm curious, what's the best piece of leadership advice you've either been given in your career or come across lately that you keep coming back to just to remind you to be a better leader?
If you don't have an answer right away, it's okay. And it's okay to say, I'm going to get back to you on that one. That is honestly something, especially in the heat of moment on things, I think it's a very good one to fall back to. When you want to make sure that the answer you're going to be giving as a school leader is one that is going to consider all the stakeholders and all the key components of information. So that's one that I've had to fall back on several times in my career.
That's awesome. Well, Laura, I hope this was enjoyable for you as it was me, because I'm already visualizing in my head, I hope Caitlin's listening, our producer, I'm already visualizing a couple of ways to bring you back in really fun formats. And so this was a blessing. I love how, I mean, you always operate this way with very direct answers, very thoughtful answers. And so hopefully it was fun enough to want to come back. If it's not, we just appreciate you having time and making time while you're in your school building. So thank you so much, Laura.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate being on here. I love learning from everyone who's on your podcast as well. So I will come on again if the opportunity presents itself, but I will also keep watching.
All right. Well, we appreciate it, Laura. Laura, look at this. Look at the time. We don't need to announce it, but look at the time.
Good job.
We got you. Get back to your day job. I appreciate you
so
much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. Bye.